action at night is underway.
Here's the lob. That's the difference.
Johnson's on the board in a big way. As Hart hits the turnaround shot. Berry now has 3 out of 3 from outside.
Booth with 6 to shoot. He's got Johnson on.
Going to step back. Put up the chopper for 3. As Page tries to take it again, it does. 5 seconds to go in the half. Booth, he has time, puts it up, and comes.
Big time dagger. Booth, open and close it.
Big shot right here. Barry's 3, yes. Carolina's crawled back into it. Got it down low. Johnson backs it home, and it's down to 1. Carolina fights for it and gets the putback. It's Page off balance, puts it up. To the court with Archie Diacono. 3 seconds at midcourt.
Jenkins
gives it to Jenkins for the championship. Yes! The national champions with Jenkins hitting the winner at the buzzer.
Welcome everyone into this edition of the Sports Report Podcast with Brad and Clay on TIRN Sports. Check out replays of our shows on SoundCloud, iTunes, and Audio Boom. Welcome into the show, my co-host Clay Schwitter. Clay, how we doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good.
What did you think of the epic national championship game we had last night?
Couldn't ask for a better game. I'll be honest, I was pretty... I'm pulling for Villanova, as you know.
Of course.
I think we've made it.
Big Jay Wright guy, big Nova guy. I think we both were pulling for Nova a little bit here.
Yeah, I wasn't feeling too good at halftime, though.
You know what? Hey, I was thinking, I was watching a game going into halftime there. North Carolina was on a big run. It kind of felt like North Carolina was about to take over. They started hitting more of their threes. We have that big shot going right into to halftime at the buzzer. It's odd we had the same team hit a buzzer beater at the first half and the second half, and both were big impact
shot
to the game.
Wouldn't have won without either shot, obviously. That did relieve a little bit of anxiety. I'll give you that. You're right about that. But second half, Villanova came out on fire. You know, I thought Villanova was going to run away with it there for a time, but I should have, you know, in the back of my mind, you knew North Carolina had a run in them, and sure enough, to come back to tie the game like they did on that crazy shot. Now, everybody's obviously focused on the game winner at the buzzer, which is crazy, but the shot before on the other end, I've never seen a shot like that it's like he pump faked while he was in the air. I mean,
yeah, it's really crazy.
What's the chance of that shot going in, you know?
It's really crazy because we're coming down to about, there's about 10 seconds left to go in the game. There's a really dangerous pass is made there. Page finds a way to grab it. He picks it up, and he picks up his dribble. You got 2 Wildcat defenders right there, and he double clutches in the air and shoots a 3, and it goes in to tie the game.
You would have thought that there was only, you know, half a second left the way he shot it, you know, it's like, you know, there's still plenty of time for a shot, but when he's feeling it, he's feeling it. He's been feeling it this tournament. You got to give him that. But then great execution on the other end, obviously, to get the ball down the floor, make a nice little pass and kind of a pick, you know, on the game winner. You're more of the basketball guru. I don't know how you would, it wasn't a pick, you know, but he obviously passed it and kind of went underneath him. That was a nice executed play. I thought everybody thought he was going to shoot it, and then he passed it right there at the last second. I bet, you know, it's crazy how much you can do in basketball with in 4 seconds. I mean, to be able to get the ball all the way down the floor and pass it and get off a shot in plenty of time. It wasn't even close, you know. There was still plenty of it. You could tell he got the shot off, you know, just under a second. I mean, there was plenty of time. I mean, it wasn't even close. I don't even think the refs, they might have reviewed it just to be courteous, but it was obvious that the shot was, you know, got off in plenty of time. Just great execution by Villanova right there at the end when they needed it the most.
Listening to the post-game news conference, and actually the most outstanding player of the game was not the man who hit the shot. It ended up being Ryan Archidiacono who makes that pass.
Yeah, how do you say his last name? I think everybody calls him Arch.
They call him Archie and Arch and everything. Archie. Now that I know how to say it, Archie Diacono, it's a little bit easier to say.
I would be saying Archie Diacono. But, I thought he was going to take a shot. I thought he was just going to run down there and take a shot. I think everybody was expecting him to take a shot, honestly. But a good job of passing it off. And just a great, great play call. Got to give him credit. And trying to remember. They didn't call timeout, did they? They just went with it.
This was actually, like I said, listen to the post-game news conference after the game. They were saying that this is actually a play they draw up and they run each and every practice. So this is something they kind of plan for, one of these freak instances where you need a big shot late in the game. And and this is actually the play. You know, Chris Jenkins is trailing. He said he's all every play like this in practice or in the game, he's trailing this play. And when you have that experience of running that play, you can kind of, in your mind, have a picture of how the defense usually plays that. And that's what he did because he had two guys in that instance. They were both going after Archie. We'll call him Archie for the rest of the show. They're both going after Archie there for the big shot late in the game because you think, you know, he's already got 16 points. He's had a fun night shooting three, so why not just one more to seal the deal? And he does a perfect job. The pass could not be any more perfect because it was right on the money. It was well-timed, and it gave Jenkins the time to just walk straight into his shot like it was just a normal three-point shot and then launch it, and it was good to go.
Yeah, I don't think there was – it looked good from the moment it left his hands, and sure enough it was.
The best part about this was seeing everyone's reactions. So I don't know what it is about sports. – Maybe I just, you know, it's me at heart. Watching all these games, whenever you see fans go crazy or one particular person go crazy, that's what makes it worthwhile, is everyone coming together for the end of the game. It's all on the line. The championship, the whole season, man, is riding on this play right here. And it just, for to see the reaction of all the Wildcat fans back on campus of Villanova and then to watch everyone's reaction in the stands at the game last night, and then you see –
The pavilion was happening.
Right.
It kept going back to the pavilion.
I don't know. Did you see the reaction of Charles Barkley, who's, you know, of course, with Turner Sports?
Yeah, I saw that on Facebook. It looked like he was you just thought he was a Villanova.
The Jet. He was from North Carolina.
Oh yeah.
And he's on that broadcasting group as well, and for him to be dancing around in his face while his team loses the national championship at the buzzer, that was kind of funny.
That was pretty funny. Hey, speaking of Charles Barkley, he made a pretty good, he'll go on his rant sometimes. It wasn't really a rant. I think somebody just asked him his opinion, honestly, his honest opinion, and he gave a pretty compelling argument that he thinks players should have to stay in college for at least 2 years in college. He doesn't like the direction of the NBA game, and he thinks that players would do better. He thinks the two best players in the league right now, and his opinion is Kawhi Leonard and obviously Steph Curry, and both of those guys played, you know, multiple years in college. He thinks it would be beneficial to the NBA game and the college game. I kind of agree with him on that, but that's kind of a, you know, that's just a little side nugget there. But
a little sidebar. We can get into that a little bit later because I do want to talk about.
He says things and does some things that, you know.
Sometimes you wonder if he did take his medication today or not. And that's when he goes off on the rant.
But then he'll say something that you totally agree with, you know.
Yeah, I was like, I guess, you know what? He's pretty smart. He was a pretty good basketball player.
Yeah, he played more than 1 year.
We'll get into that a little bit later because I want to talk about Damian Lillard, another guy who stayed 3 or 4 years. And it's just, and you look at the comparison to a guy like maybe Irving in Cleveland. That was a guy who was one. He didn't even play a full season. He was hurt most of the season.
Right.
Kyrie Irving.
Took him a while to get going in the league.
Yeah, and then you look at him now, and you just compare him to Stephen Curry. You compare him to Damian Lillard. I actually think Lillard's a better player than Irving right now. But we can get into that a little bit later. I want to talk a little bit more about the national championship, Clay. We saw two teams. You going in. And really, you know, taking a step back to the Final Four games over the weekend, it was clear these two teams were meant to meet in the title game this week. You have Villanova crush Oklahoma, shooting 71% from the field all over the place, and winning the game by 44 points, 95-51. And then on the other flip side, you had North Carolina knocking out Syracuse, the only 10 seed to make it this far in any tournament history. And a big win, 83-66. So it was clear these two teams were going to be the best ones left, and they wanted it more, it felt like. It felt like, to me, watching the last 3 or 4 games by Villanova, they were, you know, they're on a mission. They're ready to get there. And this is the second title in school history, the first since 1985. And really, none of these players on this team were born. So it was the first national championship that this generation can really celebrate and call their own.
And that game had a pretty epic ending too. If I
Yeah, it really did.
I don't remember. I wasn't alive, but I'm pretty sure I've seen the highlights, and it came down to a kind of a similar finish.
That was actually a fun game because I believe it was between Villanova and Georgetown, was it not?
Yeah. They upset Georgetown. Yeah.
That was Patrick Ewing was on that.
Patrick Ewing did all he could do, and it still wasn't enough.
Wildcats, baby. Something about the Wildcats.
But yeah, I've always liked kind of like Villanova. I'm not sure why. Maybe just I don't know. I've always just kind of liked Villanova. Maybe I just like saying Villanova.
Maybe.
But,
it's fun to say.
Yeah.
And then what's even better is to say just Nova.
It's hard to. I mean, it's something about Villanova. They always have all these players you can't pronounce half their starting lineup. But I don't know. I just like him. I like Jay Wright. He's a good guy. He's a good coach. You know, it was just a few short years ago. You know, Villanova had that really bad year. Do you remember that?
I do. I think it was weird. It was actually a couple seasons ago.
It wasn't that long ago.
The Nova and Georgetown both are just garbage.
Garbage. They were a young team. Yeah, they were a young team. They were rebuilding, and they knew it was going to be a bad year. Jay Wright was never even close to being on the hot seat. Now that really, you know, turned out to be a really great move by Villanova. You know, they knew it was going to be kind of a rough year, and it was. I don't even think they made the NIT. I mean, it was really. I think they had a losing record, but they stuck with Jay Wright. You know, and it paid dividends. You know, they knew they were going to have a bad year that year. They were young and inexperienced, and patience paid off and a well-deserved win. A great tournament for Villanova. Look at the teams they beat.
I know,
man.
Right?
They definitely earned this chance to be there. You know, and on the flip side, North Carolina, you know, they probably had the easiest road of any of the teams, you know.
Yeah, Kentucky being knocked
off. In recent memory, I mean, yeah, Kentucky got knocked off. They played Syracuse in the Final Four, a 10 seed, which, you know, Syracuse had a good tournament run, but still, you know, it's a 10 seed. North Carolina definitely wasn't as challenged up to this point as Villanova was, but hey, they just played the teams that were in front of them. You can't, you know, fault North Carolina for that. But it may have hurt them a little bit not being quite as tested as Villanova was.
Phil Booth led the Wildcats with 20 points, and he was on fire. He was a man on a mission. He was 6 out of 7, and really had 6 free throws to add to that as well. 100% from the line, 2 for 2 from 3-point land, off the bench. Yeah. You're right. And then some more guys that helped him out, of course, Archie piled in 16 points and that key assist late in the game there to seal the deal. Yeah. Josh Hart, a guy who really impressed me. I was so impressed by the abilities of Josh Hart on those turnaway jumpers and breaking down guys in the half court. He finishes with 12 points and 8 rebounds. And then also your boy Chris Jenkins comes up big late in the game, 14 points. He got into a little foul trouble to start the game, 2 quick fouls early. And then J-Rod did an interesting thing, you know, watching – Alabama and Avery Johnson and how they manage Abazahan's fouls late in the SEC tournament. He would, like, 3 games in a row, he had 2 fouls really quick in every game. And he didn't really bring him back for that long. If he did bring him back, it wasn't for very long, and it was late in the first half. He didn't want to risk.
Pretty much set him the whole first half.
He really did. And then Abazahan would go on a tear and score 18 points in the second half to finish the game. But Jay Wright did a very interesting thing. One of these great coaching calls where he actually put Jenkins back in there. Jenkins comes in for just a solid 2 minutes, and he pounds away about 5 points, grabs about a rebound or two, and even gets an assist all in 2 minutes. And then he puts him back on the bench, and he saves him, and he doesn't get that third foul.
Wow, that was a good move.
It really was. It got kind of like a lift to the team there because they were actually needing it at that point because North Carolina was going on their little run there, and Page was knocking it down from 3 in the corner and 3 on the wing. He was the hot guy for North Carolina. And you just think that at that time they needed something to mix it up a little bit, and that's where Jay Wright comes back in with Jenkins, and that's exactly what happens.
Well, last game of the year, you know, you can't leave the guy sitting on the bench because he's got 2 fouls. I mean, if he gets his 3rd foul, then take him back out. But, yeah, I agree. That was a great call by Jay Wright. Good point.
It was a really interesting game. I was so impressed by just a few players.
Gutty game. Both teams, I was surprised at I mean, I've obviously watched these two teams, but I guess I hadn't really paid attention as much. But, I mean, both teams had really short benches. I mean, the starters played most of the games for both teams. It was really,
I'm really glad you pointed that out. You got 3 coming off the bench for Villanova and just 4. And, you know, the biggest key contributor for North Carolina was Hicks. Then, of course, the big one for Booth, for the Wildcats, there's Phil Booth. But other than him, you know, Bridges didn't offer that much, and Reynolds didn't either. So it was all pretty much
the starters. Booth may not have played as much if it hadn't been for Jenkins getting in top trouble.
That's right. It's another good play. He came off the bench, and he stepped up when he needed to. And I was mentioning North Carolina, a couple of players that really stood out for me. Them watching, because it was really a great game. That's what you want in the national championship. You want two teams to really battle it out the whole way, and that's exactly what happened. I mean, the largest lead of the game was 10 by Villanova and 7 for North Carolina, and that was just going back and forth all game. Mm-hmm. I was really impressed by Joel Berry, the point guard for North Carolina. And I mean, how could you not be impressed, of course, by Marcus Page?
Solid. Yeah, Gary would have a solid game. Page had a solid game. They were both spotting it up from downtown. I think that Barry, I don't think Barry missed a three, and Page made more than he missed, from my memory.
Yeah, Barry was 4 out of 4, and Page was 4 out of 7.
Yeah, North Carolina shot pretty good from three. And so did Villanova. Both these teams were pretty lights out from three. I think North Carolina actually probably shot a better percentage. Let me see. Yeah, North Carolina shot nearly 65% from three, and that's hard to beat. And Villanova shot 57% from three, so that's both teams, you know, that's how they got there, especially Villanova with their outside shooting.
It's pretty even all the way down. You look at the stat sheet.
Yeah.
Rebounds are probably the biggest difference, and that was all North Carolina there, out rebounding 36
to 23. Not surprising at all. Yeah, not surprising outside North Carolina. They've just been playing volleyball with people. And it's been working, you know. A lot of times for North Carolina, the tournament, you know, their best offense is a missed shot and a chance for a putback. You know, that's been their best offense, you know, for a while in this tournament. So that's been not surprising at all.
It's just a really good game. That's the way you want it to be, the national championship.
Oh, yeah.
And it just, like I said, it came down to the wire. This is what this is what you dream the national championships are going to be about when you think of how you want it to play out. This is it. This is the best. I mean, people are already, Clay, they're already saying that this was the best national championship game in tournament history. Do you think it's up there? I know it's up there in the top five. Has to be, but is it the
top game?
I
remember that Memphis-Kansas form a few years ago. Remember, was it with Calipari?
Derrick Rose.
That was a pretty good game. Man, that had to be a while ago if Derrick Rose was playing in it. You're
it
right,
was,
man.
Yeah.
That seems like it was just a few years ago.
Face it, man. We're getting old.
Yeah, we are. That was a good game. I remember Duke and Butler was a pretty good game, you know.
Butler almost got him at the buzzer there. Hayward shot that
almost,
three and almost got it.
Yeah, that was a good game. But this one right here, hitting it, obviously the NC State,
Coach Navano goes
and hugs. Was that in the national championship game or was that in a...
That was a national championship game, and that is the only... Besides last night, that was the only championship game to come down to a buzzer beater.
That answered my question. I was wondering.
Yeah. And then last night's game in, that was the only jumper for, you know, at the buzzer to win it. But that dunk, that put back late. I mean, and just imagine, Clay, if we were to go back, if we had, you know, what we have now with the technology and having reviews, how long that would have took for them just to decide if he did slam it down, if his hands are on the rim or all that junk. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It was close to being a goaltending in today's game. It might be goaltending. I don't know. But that was great. It was a great finish. I don't know. This one, man, this was a good game. I'd have to put it up there near the top. Definitely the top three or four to come down to. Because Page's shot on one end was so crazy, and it went in to tie it up, to cap off a great comeback for North Carolina. And then on the other end, just the great execution and Jenkins burying it. You know, a deep three. It was a deep three right there at the end. It was, you know, it was executed nicely and all, but man, it was a deep three, and it was no doubt about it too. So it was, I don't know, this would definitely be in the top three or four, I'd say, maybe number one.
You know, and you think
probably number one that I've watched with my own eyes. I will say that.
That's true.
It was probably a little bit better than that Kansas-Memphis game, probably just a little bit.
I think you're right, because this is a back and forth game, two top teams in college basketball all season long. It wasn't like just one team came on a run late. These are two teams who were both number one at one point in the regular season this year.
Oh, yeah.
And here they were finding out for the national championship game, and you thought that Page's shot right there, double clutching that three, you thought that was going to be the shot of the night.
Yeah, I thought North Carolina would probably win it in overtime at that point. I was like, well.
Yeah. I was thinking the same thing after that. I was like, really? Okay, how can you top that? How can you top that shot?
Yeah.
And then Chris Jenkins is like, "Hey, I got some more plans for you." Knocks it down. Confetti. Yeah. How about how quick the confetti came down? I mean,
good point. The refs were still, you know, it's same. I mean, no, I think the refs didn't even have time to put the pads up in there. I don't think it was just like boom, boom.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, getting that sound bite ready for the show.
They were ready. Somebody had their finger on the trigger.
Yeah, I mean,
what if it went in and out? You know, they mashed the button thinking it was going in.
What if his hand was still on the ball and it didn't count?
Yeah.
Then you got like, you know, you got to pause for about 15 minutes to clean all the confetti up and get all these people back in their seats. And I mean, yeah. it was a pretty quick trigger by whoever was holding that confetti bomb.
Oh yeah, That.
How loud too? I don't know what kind of cannons they used for that. That was loud. People looking around like there was a gunshot.
Hey, the way the world is today, yeah, you can't be too careful.
Hey, you know what? I'm glad you mentioned that because apparently at the buzzer beater last night when it went in and everybody's celebrating, apparently the North Carolina Tar Heel mascot got knocked over and got swung in the helmet or the face, wherever you call it, in the horn, and he got knocked out by some fan. I'm not sure if it was I'm sure it can't be a North Carolina fan, but a Nova fan probably. It's on video. I've seen it on Facebook today and on Twitter as well. Just gets a left hook and goes down. I mean, what kind of society? What kind of society are we living in when you're a mascot and you get beat up at a championship game?
I don't know. It's sad. I don't know if it was. I don't know. I guess it was a North Carolina fan and I just upset because the team just lost. Why would a Villanova fan do it?
It looked like that. I don't know. It looked like to me what happened was is there's a little bit leading up to this because there was like a couple people walking and apparently someone had tripped over someone and bumped into him and he kind of looked up and said, "Hey, what are you? You know, watch where you're going. I'm walking here." And at that point,
the
kind of
mascot. The Tar Heel.
Yeah, the mascot looked up at him. He was sitting on the ground and he got bumped into by someone walking. He looked up and kind of threw his hands up. You know.
I'm just picturing him in his mascot outfit, throwing his hands up in the air.
And that's when he got, you know, got jammed in the horn there, and that was pretty much it. And his lights out.
Did he lower his horns and try and butt him?
You know, I'm pretty sure it continued on. The video cut out, and he actually went out of the screen.
Which I guess that mascot, you know, it's obviously soft, and you know, not.
Yeah, I'm sure it kind of roughed him up a little bit. It got to.
Yeah, it might have a little bit of a cushion in there. Might could do a little bit of damage.
That brings up an interesting question. I want to kind of strength program these mascots go through.
Hey, I tell you what, it gets hot in there. Gotta have good. It'd be like driving NASCAR or something.
I think the conditioning of the mascot people, they have to be up there with, you know, football players, basketball. They have to go through the same training to me, it feels like, because they're in that hot thing for God knows how long, every game.
Yeah.
And remember the Oregon Duck on the football, he does push-ups every time they score.
He's in shape now.
So he's probably the buffest, you know, mascot out there, do you think? Like inside the suit would be the Oregon Duck guy.
You have to be in shape. I mean, you go to an Alabama game, you know, on the first weekend of the season, early September. Yeah, it's pretty dang hot. Yeah, I wouldn't want to be in a Big Al outfit in Tuscaloosa when it's 80-something degrees.
I want somebody to send us at TIR Sports Report on Twitter. Send us some kind of regiment, video, whatever training these guys have to go through in the off season to get in shape for the regular season and the playoffs. Remember, if your team is good, you got to keep going. You got to keep wearing the suit for weeks on end.
Oh, yeah.
And not only that, but you have to be entertained because people are watching the game on national television. You're the mascot, so you have to do some sort of, you know, have some kind of ability to do some kind of athleticism of some kind.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I wonder if the same person is the mascot for all the sports, or do they rotate it?
See, that's a good question. I was actually going to think of one, too. How long is a dude in? Like, how, you know, do you have to, like, each year, do you have to try out? Or, you know, how do we decide who gets the suit for how long? And it's a good question. Do they do it for every sporting event that they have for each team and, you know, each kind of sport?
Sure, do they have a rotation?
You would think.
Well, bigger schools do, but smaller schools may not. Because smaller schools may just have one guy, you know. Surely Alabama and big schools like that have rotations, I would think.
I can just see how that worked out, though. Like, hey, man, do you want to go hang out with us this weekend? We're going to have some party on campus. No, I can't. I got to be the mascot at the volleyball game.
I bet he's a pretty popular guy.
So that's true. But that's the thing. You do look around.
Or girl.
He is pretty. Yeah, or girl. That's a good question. Good point.
Yeah. Which some mascot, some teams have, you know, female mascot, female versions of the mascot for the female sporting events. You know,
gotta have equality.
Gotta be politically correct.
I just think it's a fascinating topic to bring up and discuss mascots.
Yeah. We chase some little rabbits, but hey, it's still related to the game. It happened during the game, so it's relatable.
It's a relatable topic, and I'm sure everyone has their own opinion too. What they think, you know, what kind of regiment. I'm sure there's someone out there listening who, at one point or another, was a mascot or the dude in the mask or female in the mascot uniform, going out there and putting on a show each and every night.
It ain't a fat person under there. I'll just say that.
That's right. Gotta be in shape. I'm sure the diet too. You gotta be able to be conditioned and eat right. And I mean, it's a tough job. I know I probably wouldn't be able to do it. It'd be hot, and I'm not. See, when I play football, Clay, when we play football back in the day of the gridiron, you know, I had a rough time with a face mask because I couldn't see my peripheral vision was cut off by these bars in the helmet and these big earmuffs too. So I couldn't even see out of that. So I couldn't imagine being in a mascot and not knowing where I'm at.
You pretty much just see straight forward, I would think. Straight in front of you is what
I guess. And then I don't know.
Maybe it depends on the mascot. I mean, I'm sure the Tar Heel has, you know, I'm sure the horns on the side were probably covering his peripherals pretty bad.
Probably. And sometimes, I don't know how light and what they're made of, but sometimes I'm thinking that sometimes they could be heavy. You know,
those heads are pretty big.
Exactly. So if you're leading with your head, you know, who knows? You can just tip over. All right, so that was mascot segment here on the Sports Report. If you have any more input, hit us up on Facebook, the Sports Report, and us on Twitter at TIR Sports Report. I want to see some kind of training video, a regiment of some kind for mascots. I'm serious about this. I'm all up into this mascot stuff here.
Well, we can do it. We can do the mascot challenge.
Well, exactly. That's what we need to have is a mascot challenge this summer. Come on down. We'll make it happen. So, Clay, I have a question for you. You know, while we're on the topic of some crazy, wacky stuff here, Something that's big in social media, especially on Twitter, is the Michael Jordan memes of him crying at the Hall of Fame induction when he gave his speech. And now people just put his crying face on everything. And last night would have been a perfect moment for people to kind of back off, if North Carolina were to win, for people to back off on that, maybe do a happy meme, because he was sitting in studio, or not in studio, but sitting at the game, and the camera was on him more than the game at some points.
Right.
But it would have been a perfect moment for them just to go ahead and say, okay, here's a good moment for Michael Jordan. Let's do a happy face maybe, and we can have that meme. And the sad Michael Jordan meme dies. But no, they got stronger overnight. And I don't think this is the biggest it's ever been when it comes to any kind of memes, I think, because Michael Jordan, you just see his face now on everything. It's him crying and sad. And then they have vines out there with him and the memes. I don't know how people have time to do this stuff. I don't even know how to do it either.
It's pretty crazy.
You have to put two or three hours of production work just to make it happen for people to go out and like it on Facebook.
Yeah, I know. That's what I don't get. What are you getting out of this? A like?
For someone to like and then comment. Yeah, someone.
I like. I'm going to click on like on here. I don't know. But,
and he's like, hey, Buzz, I guess what? I got 2 likes on my Michael Jordan meme. Come at me, bros. I got this.
Yeah, I did see some pretty funny ones. I think I saw one that it was like the North Carolina bench, you know, right as the shot went in.
Right.
At the end of the game, and they all had Michael Jordan's crying face. You know, that was kind of funny. Some of them were funny, but there were just way too many of them, like you said.
I think the best one that I saw, that I liked the most was there's 2 pictures. One is Michael Jordan looking at his phone in the stands, and then the other one's cuts to his hands and his phone, and it's him crying on the meme. So it's like he's looking at he's going through Twitter or something, and he sees one.
He's keeping up with the game on his phone and not even looking at
exactly. And it's in his North Carolina shirt that he was wearing at the game last night. He's looking at himself on his phone in the meme.
Speaking of which, fans in attendance at the games, you know, they want to play these big games in these big stadiums. What do you think about that? Do you think they should just keep it to arenas?
Yeah, I'm sure you're kind of pointing out to Mike Greenberg what he said about it. I think this morning he said that it was a travesty. I don't know if it's a travesty like Mike says. There are things that are more, you know, chicken salad that's all mushy. That is a travesty. No, I didn't like it either. It's weird. Everyone's sitting like the bench. They're like down 2 levels, so you can barely see on the floor. For me, it's always kind of like a safety thing.
Yeah, I don't like the benches.
Yeah, that's kind of a safety issue.
Well, somebody like tweeted a picture of their seat that they paid like $400 for upper deck, and you can't even. The basketball court just looks like a little dot. They're having to watch the game on the big screen. You know what I mean? It's just. Why pay that much money just to watch it on a screen? You can watch it on the screen, you know, in your house, and you don't have to pay $8 for beer, you know. It's just like, I don't understand. I guess they just want to say that they were there.
I guess. I don't know. That'd be a dedicated Nova or North Carolina fan or just a big fan of hoops in general.
I don't know. If I was a dedicated fan to be one of those teams, I'd want to be sitting close enough where I could see the actual court.
Yeah, I want to be on the lower level where I'm looking up on the court.
At least in the middle, something. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of it either. I just looking at the court, it looks weird. It's huge. I feel like it's like we're back in Gladiator days where people just, I don't know, it feels weird to me, you know?
Yeah.
And it's kind of an interesting story to bring up because now you look at these open classic tournaments that the NCAA basketball team has each and every year now. At the first game of the season, going back a couple of years, it's been like Michigan State playing somebody on a ship, on a naval ship.
Kind of, yeah.
I mean, I guess. I mean, and then you have other people. It's just keep it on a basketball floor, can we? I mean, it's like, what if we put a football field, you know?
Yeah.
You know, just somewhere out in this crazy place in the water, you know? Let's have a football field on a golf field, you know, and then see what happens.
It's only a matter of time for them to have a basketball game at Lambeau.
They're going to. It's happening. Not really, but I'm sure that's not too far from that. There is one game, I think. Isn't there some team that's close to playing at another NFL stadium? It's outside, too.
A basketball game?
Yeah.
I haven't heard that. I don't know. You probably were asking. I wouldn't.
Yeah, I think I heard maybe Baltimore, somewhere in Baltimore, they're going to play there at that stadium outside. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
I hope it's early in the year.
And it's not raining, either.
I hope it's not a December game.
It's going to be chilly.
Not raining, yeah. Has a basketball game ever been canceled due to rain?
I don't think so. Maybe even inclement weather. They could use it as that and say it's snow, but the court got too. It was too wet from the rain. We had to cancel. Oh, okay. That's normal.
I don't know. That'd be interesting.
So Villanova is your national champions. They get away and sneak out with a big win, with a big shot there by Chris Jenkins late, set up by Archie. And, man, just what a game to look back on, one of the best. And it's going to be a fun and exciting offseason. Looking forward to the NBA draft coming up in a few months and then getting ready to get back into the gym and have another season, hopefully just like this one. It was one of the most balanced seasons. You look at teams who had multiple losses that were at the top of the game, really. You know, each team had five or six losses, it felt like, so... Maybe we'll see that continue on next season. Duke, I heard, is an early favorite to be the number one in the AP, the preseason. Going from this season, I don't think it'll matter that much because I think we'll see just as many teams swap it around like we did this year.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. I think there's the amount of parity in all sports is at an all-time high, no doubt about it.
So, Clay, the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame class of 2016 was announced this past week. And the reason why I bring this up, it's a huge thing for, of course, the athletes and the sport itself. But this one kind of hits home for me and you because there's a few people on this list, Clay, that we grew up watching who have now since retired onto the Naismith Hall of Fame. And it's going to be so much fun to say we watched them play in their prime. And I'm going to go ahead and give you guys what we have here. The committee announced that coming up, the 10 members of the class will be honored September 8th and 10th at the Enshrinement Festivities in Springfield, Massachusetts. And I'm going to go ahead and give you down the list of the names here. This year's class includes 27-year-old NBA referee, sorry, not year old, but 27-year vet NBA referee Daryl Garriston. And also, how about this, two-time National Basketball Coach of the Year, Tom Izzo, who's still coaching, by the way, at Michigan State. Yeah, that's kind of an early entry for me. The first African-American coach in a professional league, John McClendon. And four-time WNBA champion, Cheryl Swoops. And you also have a few more. Zelmo Betty from the Veterans Committee. You also have Cumberland Posey, who played as early African-American from the Pioneers back in the day. and Jerry Ransdorf, who was a big-time GM and was on the committee as well. And, Clay, some of the names that hit home to me and you that we know.
Oh, yeah.
How about the guy from all the way from China who really changed the game, changed the way a lot of people viewed the game, and it really helped the NBA, and that was Yao Ming, inducted into this year's Hall of Fame class.
Yeah, Yao, his career ended a little sooner than everybody would have liked, but, you know, being that size, you know, he probably had some, you know, he's probably having some health issues. In all honesty, I'm it's harder for a guy that big to, you know, harder on their legs and everything like that. But anyways, yeah, great career for Yao. He really did change the game, open things up for some more Asian players, I think. Well-deserved.
This was the guy who is kind of the guy you point to when it comes to big men with injuries, because he had multiple feet issues and had surgeries after surgery, and really cut, you're right, it really cut his career short. And a lot of people kind of forget about Yao. I mean, they think of, you know, they see the name and the guy and how he was a tall, you know, man in general, but they forget what kind of game he had and how the next guy, they went back and forth for, you know, a good 3 or 4 years in the Western Conference. And that was like the matchup, it felt like, just to see these two guys go against each other. That's something we haven't seen in the NBA since going back to Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain, you know, those big guys. Mm-hmm. And that was Shaquille O'Neal, 3-time NBA MVP, Finals MVP. Shaquille O'Neal being inducted to this year's Hall of Fame as well. To have him and Yao Ming both in the same class, that's pretty special.
That is, yeah. Yao Ming is about the only man that can make Shaq look short, honestly, like a normal height, you know. Yeah. Shaq looked kind of short standing next to Yao. It's pretty crazy. But obviously, Shaq, great player, great personality off the floor, you know. He did one thing about Shaq, and it's not his own fault, really, per se, but I wish he hadn't played for so many teams.
Right. You know, I wish those years in Phoenix.
Yeah.
You know, Cleveland. Yeah. People forget he played with LeBron in Cleveland.
He did win championship with Miami, so I guess you can give him that. I wish he would have just played for, you know, the Magic, the Lakers, and finished his career in Miami or something. You know what I mean?
Right.
Then he ended up having a cup of tea with the Celtics right there at the very end.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He did play with the Celtics. It was Rasheed Wallace, Shaq, you know, Ray Allen, Kevin Garnett, those guys, Paul Pierce.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was a weird group.
But Shaq, in his prime, you know, one of the most dominant players in the league. You know, and have him, you know, with Kobe Bryant, obviously those Laker teams, grew up watching them, you know, dominate, winning multiple titles, you know, as you mentioned, him winning multiple MVPs. It was something to see. You know, it was a no-brainer that he'd be, inducted.
Talk about the two.
As the first ballot Hall of Famer.
Talk about the two, you know, most memorable big men in our generation, Clay, going back. Everyone knew who Shaq was, watching him play. He was like the guy, you know, when it comes to. He was like Anthony Davis, Kevin Garnett, all these people thrown together. You know, he was such just a credible athlete, one of the best basketball players in our generation to watch. And, of course, Yao Ming, two of the biggest guys to go at each other like that, go back and forth in those battles in the Western Conference. But Clay, arguably, metaphorically, the biggest and tallest man to go into the Hall of Fame this year is my favorite player, 11-time NBA All-Star, 3-time scoring champ, Allen Iverson. This guy,
I know, this is home for you. He was your idol.
He was. Growing up as a small kid playing basketball, he was who I wanted to make my game just like. On and off the court, because he was a guy who, you know, he gets a bad rep for the way he carried himself and the way he dressed, and that was a rough time for the NBA introducing the dress code at that point. People wanted, you know, they wanted the NBA players to wear suits and all this, and he was a guy going by that by no means. His motto that he lived his life by, still does to this day, is he's going to be him. No matter what it takes, you know, it doesn't matter who it's around, he doesn't care. He's going to be himself no matter where he's at, on the court, off the court. And that's kind of what spoke to me as a young kid watching basketball. And, you know, that's really cool to think about, because my very first NBA game that I ever watched, Clay, was the 2000 finals between Allen Iverson and Shaquille O'Neal, both now into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, great series.
And, I mean, Allen Iverson, to me, he changed the game in so many levels, because now that opened up the door for a lot of little guys. You know, he was a 6-foot guy. He was 140 pounds.
Yeah.
He had that sick crossover, And he attacked the basket and attacked those big guys in the trees in the paint. And, you know, somehow he'd make it go down.
Yeah, great player, great scorer, just a scorer. You know, he scored, could score in multiple ways, a great shooter, you know, could drive, you know, just a leader on the floor. You know, he's a great passer. He just, you know, he did so many things well, you know. Obviously, he could pick your pocket and get, you know, a steal whenever he needed one, it seemed like. I mean, just a great player, and you know, he always gave effort, and it's a shame he never won a title.
Right.
But he's one of the greatest players, in my opinion, he's one of the greatest players in any sport to never win a title.
What's crazy to think about is a lot of people, you know, you mentioned he didn't win a title. People, they think when you go into Hall of Fame and Legends, you think they have to win a title to be considered that. Not the case with this guy. No. He had the biggest heart of any NBA player in the history of the league. You know, changing the game for the prospect off the court and then bringing it to the court and doing what he did each and every night, bringing it. He was a guy who was banged up all the time, every season, from getting knocked down to the floor. He had injury after injury as well, but he fought through it. It's a guy who's sitting on the bench when he's not in the game. He's getting taped up with ice, you know, and then he's got all these injuries here and there, but it's hard fought and it's well-deserved. He gets into the Hall of Fame this year. First ballot Hall of Famer.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really special to see my favorite player in that time span in that generation, Allen Iverson.
He'll obviously, you know, he's obviously a Sixer through and through, but exactly. he played for a couple other teams too. I wish he could kind of.
Yeah.
He played for Memphis.
He played for Memphis. He's crazy note here about Memphis. He played three games for the Grizzlies, right? Being with the Grizzlies for those three games, he has now become the first Memphis Grizzly Hall of Famer.
Oh, did I play for Memphis for three games?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He actually, you know, played a ton of years in Philadelphia, and it felt like each and every year he was on the verge of being traded, like the last six or seven, last three or four he was there. There's always, you know, talk at the trade deadline, free agency. They're talking about moving him. There were a few suitors, you know, Boston, they were really close to getting AI. Yep. The Lakers were close to getting him one time. It never happened. And late in his career, he gets traded to Denver to play with Carmelo Anthony. They go on a couple good runs there in the playoffs. They had, you know, Kenyon Martin, Nene, Chauncey Billups on that squad. So they had a good run there in Denver. And then he gets traded to Detroit. And I liked him in Detroit uniform myself. That was pretty cool to see. But it was well after that run that the Pistons had with Rasheed Wallace and with Rip Hamilton, Chauncey Billups, and, you know, Tayshaun Prince and those guys. But he was there for a short time, traded to Memphis for three games, and then he actually comes back to Philadelphia and plays for the Sixers for, like, you know, just a handful of games there late in his career. Yeah. Then he retires as a 76er.
Okay. I remember he came back. I wasn't sure if he retired as a Sixer or...
Yeah, he came back, and he was like, every player on the squad was like 23 and younger, and he was, of course, like 34, 35, and... Yeah. Oldest guy on the floor, then he retires, and he walks away from the game. One of the biggest, metaphorically, you know, the biggest heart players we've ever had in the league. Speaking of the league, Clay, we're getting closer and closer to the NBA playoffs. Each team has about 8 or 9 games left to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to go ahead and run down just a few teams who clinched their playoff spot, or at least a berth, into the playoffs this season over the past week. The Boston Celtics in the East, Miami Heat in the East, and the Charlotte Hornets. All three clinched their playoff berth into this season's postseason. You know, it's crazy to think, because now you have from 3 to 6, Clay, you have Atlanta, Boston, Miami, and Hornets. They're all separated by half a game. So it could work out where, you know, these teams are going to be in these slots one way or another. Okay, because the Pacers...
That doesn't mean anything. A 3 seed is basically in a 6 seed. I mean, that's crazy how close those are.
That's right. And
there's usually a good bit of separation between a 3 and a 6.
Exactly. And because of where we're at now in the season, I don't see Indiana gaining 4 games on either one of these teams. So Hawks, Celtics, Heat, and Hornets will be 3, 4, 5, and 6 in some order. So they'll have to play each other in some way or another. But it's crazy to think how... You know, this is a team, Charlotte, man, who just came busted onto the scene late in the season. The last 25 games or so, you called it. You add them to your power rankings a few weeks ago. And here they are, man. They're sitting there at 6. They could possibly jump up to 3rd in the East in the playoff hunt. And that's something that not a lot of people predicted this season.
Got to give them credit. Got to give Michael Jordan credit for you know, it took time. but they put together a pretty good team.
And then in the West, Clive had a few more teams clinch. Of course, the Oklahoma City Thunder clinched theirs, and then the Los Angeles Clippers, who are four and a half games back behind the Thunder, they clinched their spot. And we're looking at a pretty interesting race here, because now Memphis, who they've lost a ton of games. Six straight games. Here they are now, and 2-8 in their last 10, which this is how they really should be looking. Without Marc Gasol, without Conley, this is what the team should be like, really. They're now just a half game up on the Blazers, which really deserve that 5 spot to me. They're really the 5th best team in the West, in my opinion, so they need to be up. They probably will. The last 8 games left to go, they'll probably move up into that 5 slot, and the Grizzlies will fall back down to probably the 6, giving an easy first-round opponent to the Thunder. And we have a 3-team race for the 8th spot there. Dallas, Utah. Not a lot of people are talking about Utah, but they're sitting there at 8th right now. And they're 1 game up on the Houston Rockets, who, I mean, they're just
Houston
a disappointment.
They're 4-6 in their last 10 games. When Utah's 7-3, I mean, Utah's definitely playing better ball right now. Houston's just a mess.
So for the sake of basketball, you want Utah to get in, but for entertainment, you want Houston because, you know, if you had to choose between James Harden and Dwight Howard or Rodney Hood and Gobert.
Yeah, I saw the box score to one Houston game and the other day. I think Howard had 4 points and 6 or 7 rebounds or something. I mean, his stat line was horrible, but anyways, they are a mess.
They are. And I was watching them play, you know, 2 teams that were struggling mightily at the same time, Houston Rockets and the Chicago Bulls. They played each other the other night on TNT, and neither one of them wanted the game to win. Finally, Houston, they pulled out late in the game, but it's just 2 teams. You know, Chicago, they've pretty much worked their way out of the playoffs. They're 2 games behind the Pistons and the Pacers. So they're going to need a lot of help to get back in. I don't see it happening. And then Houston, they can also see themselves pretty much, they're out right now. It's closer. They're just a game out, but they're going to have to do a lot of work. And, I mean, the prize to get the eight seed right now is to play the Warriors in the first round. So,
yeah.
I mean, how hard do you and how much do you really want that to go out early?
I think it'd be good for a Utah team. You know, it's good for a team. You know, that hasn't been in the playoffs in a long time. You know, it's a young team.
You know,
even though you're probably going to get swept, you might win 1 game at home, but it's still good just to go to the playoffs. It gives the fans something. You know, look to the future. But Houston gets nothing really by making the 8 seed. So at least Utah does have something to build on by making the playoffs.
If Houston gets in there, that's going to be the first round matchup will be the rematch of the Western Conference Championship from a year ago. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy.
As a NBA guy, I could say, and fan of the game, a couple of my favorite teams to watch play are the young teams. They're just, you know, they do have a few veterans like the Jazz here. They're all young, but they're one of the youngest teams in the league, actually, but they have Shelvin Mack on their team who's, you know, pushing, what, 34, 35?
Yeah, he's been around a little while. I don't think he's that old.
Nah, maybe not. Maybe about 32, somewhere around in there. He's at least over 30.
He played at Butler back when they first were good, back 6, 7, 8 years ago. Yeah, he's been in the league probably at least 5 or 6 years.
So Utah, they're a fun team to watch in the West. I love seeing Rodney Hood as a guy who actually went to Mississippi State. People forget that. He transfers to Duke. And plays there 1 year and comes back out. And then you also have a team. Who's that?
Gordon Hayward.
Yeah, people forget about Gordon Hayward. I'm glad you brought him up.
He got
some muscles on him. He got a haircut. And he's actually – I was watching them play the other night against the Cavs, I think, on a late night game. He's actually like the guy for them. He carries them each and every night. He's the best shooter and the best ball handler too. So he's like the guy for them, as you can say right now.
Yeah.
And he's actually pretty nice guy to watch out there playing, and a guy you kind of root for too.
Derek Favors, he's a pretty good post player, or he was.
He still is. It's kind of underwhelming from when he came out of college. People thought this was going to be, you know, this guy was a big draft get for them at the time.
Yeah.
And he hasn't quite lived up to the hype yet. He's still a great player. Don't get me wrong. I still like Derek Favors a lot. He just hasn't quite lived up to the way they want him to. And do you remember a couple years ago, Clay, when the Jazz, they had Paul Millsap, Derek Favors. Yeah. They have. I think they had another guy too. I think Cantor was on that team too.
who is it?
Enes Kanter, that's now with the Thunder. I think he was like the third or second center on the depth chart.
Yeah, yeah.
They had all these bigs that just stockpiled. Now it's all the way around. Now they have a ton of guards and no bigs.
Yeah.
But they're getting there. I like Utah. They do have one of the ugliest uniforms in the league. But they are getting some young talent in there, and that's what, you know, we're looking at a trajectory, Clay, where in about 4 or 5 seasons, you know, we're going to see. I'm really big on the Minnesota Timberwolves. I love Karl Anthony Towns and Adam Levine. I love all those guys that's on that squad. Zach LaVine on that squad. And I like where they're going right now. And that's the same thing, of course, I mentioned before the season started, Clay. I love Boston. I love the young guy. I love Brad Stevens over there and what they're doing. And to look out in a couple of seasons for the Milwaukee Bucks.
What about the Sixers? I mean, they've been young forever, getting all these great draft picks, and
they're a different kind.
Are they going to win 10 games this year? That's the question.
That's close. I say no.
They're 9-68 right now.
Yeah, I say no.
That's bad. I remember one year Atlanta was horrible, and they still won 13 games.
Yeah.
And Philadelphia might not even win 10.
I will say though. 76ers have some terrible losses. They should have about 13 wins right now, but they've gotten beat at the buzzer like 3 times.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, they're a little bit better than their record shows, if you can say that. I don't know if you can or not.
They've lost 12 in a row, sadly. But, they're trying to get that lottery pick, that number one pick, I guess.
I don't know. Each year they get there in the lottery, and they get the first – if it's either the first, second, or third pick, and depending on how the Lakers need to be terrible, because if they're not and they win a couple more games, the 76ers could have 2 picks in the top 5. So you don't want that to happen if you're a fan of the game, because what they're going to do is draft somebody that you really like, trade them, and the 76ers will win maybe 11 games next year.
Yeah, you're probably right.
So at some point, the tanking has to stop.
Yeah.
You can't be this bad forever.
I'd hope not. Still a young team. Maybe they can, I don't know.
They've had some good picks. They had, you know, they've had Okafor this year, of course, off the court kind of issues there, and then he got hurt late in the season, so he's out now.
Has the guy from Kansas even played?
Yeah, barely. Embiid?
He was drafted, 2 years ago?
Yeah. They had...
how many centers do they have? They had him. They had the guy from Kentucky. Yeah. I mean, that's all he drafted, is centers.
Right, 3 years straight.
And none of them even played.
Nope, and then 1 year they got lucky and got Michael Carter Williams. He's actually pretty decent. He's a pretty good player. He's now with Milwaukee, and he was like the guy for them that 1 year half the year that he was with the 76ers. He was the best player on the team, and now he's not there anymore. So I don't know. I think next year Okafor or Embiid or one of these guys, they won't be in that team anymore, and they'll have a worse roster than they already have.
Wow.
So, Clay, I want to get just a little bit into here. I know everyone's talked about it. It happened late last week, and that's the only bad thing about doing the show on a Tuesday. You only do one a week is because if something happened on Wednesday or Thursday, you have to wait a week to talk about it. Nevertheless, the Los Angeles Lakers have had more issues, if you can say that as well, because now not only are they, you know, having the worst loss in Laker history to 48 points to the Utah Jazz, but apparently there's some stuff going on in the locker room, too. The trust is broken down. And when D'Angelo Russell has pretty much – he caught it like a prank he was pulling on Nick Young, who's said to be one of his best friends on the team.
Okay.
And what happened was he took a video of Nick Young talking about him meeting a girl. And I think she was 19 and Nick Young's pushing 30. And, of course, the famous – Iggy Azalea is engaged to Nick Young. That's why most of this is coming up. So they talk about that, and it gets a video of him talking about him meeting this girl, and he was going to share it. Somehow it got out, okay? And the big thing about this is team players in the organization and the locker room didn't like the fact that they couldn't trust being around this guy. So now you're seeing people ignore him in the facilities of the organization and on the court during the game. And the celebrations and all, they're just not really paying attention. There was actually one moment when they had a team meeting last week where they were eating breakfast, and he sat at a table by himself. He came by and sat beside somebody. He got up and went and sat at a different table. So my question, Clay, is it a big deal, like people's making it out to be, or will we even remember this next season?
I think it'll eventually blow over. It's a good thing that the season's coming to an end. They'll have a few weeks off, you know. I think it'll probably blow over. The Lakers better hope it blows over, because those are two of their younger, you know, players. I mean, Nick Young's been around a while. They might, he might not be part of the future, but D'Angelo Russell certainly is. But yeah, I think it'll probably blow over. If not, they may get rid of Nick Young anyway. So, you know, I don't think it should really matter. It's not like they're, you know, a contender. They won what, 15, 16 games.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, I guess they could get worse. They could be the Sixers, but, you know.
Well,
I think it'll probably blow over, though. They got to get a better coach. I don't think Brian Scott has control over that team at all.
Now, there's a lot going on behind the scenes with the Lakers and the Knicks right now that we can get into on another show, just because there's so much going on with Phil Jackson and the possibilities of him jumping ship and working with the Lakers. But this season was all about Kobe Bryant's retirement, so they've kind of hidden behind him all year long. But next season, you won't have that.
Yeah.
It's actually, if you're the organization, Kobe Bryant retiring is the best thing for your free agency. Because nobody wants to play with Kobe the way he manages and co-manages every situation on and off the court. That's a big reason why Dwight Howard left and didn't like it there, is because Kobe was pretty much telling him what to do, and they didn't get along at all. So it's probably the best thing for Lakers to kind of rebuild from that. They can go and maybe sign a big free agent that'll attract other players to come. And who knows, maybe they go out and get Luke Walton to be the coach. And they kind of form their version of the Boston Celtics with Brad Stevens right now, but maybe with some bigger name athletes.
I mean, they got some decent players. I mean, obviously Russell, I think, is a pretty good young player.
Jordan Clarkson.
Yeah, Jordan Clarkson. What about Roy Hibbert? I guess he's been a bit of a disappointment this year.
Yeah, people forget he's even in the league anymore.
Yeah, he's only averaging 6 points a game. That's pretty bad. Grant Bass is a pretty good player, pretty good role player. They got some good role players. Nick Young can be a pretty good role player, I think. Julius Randle from Kentucky, I think he's got a good young future.
Yeah, I felt bad for Randle to go there, actually, when he got drafted.
Yeah, I did too. But yeah, they got some young players they can build around, for sure. It's not totally, the well is not completely empty there. And Roy Hibbert can still be a good defender and rebounder, and, you know, can still do some things. I'm sure they just signed him, so I'm sure he's locked in for at least a few more years. So they're gonna have to live with Roy Hibbert.
Well,
they can definitely upgrade Kobe's spot, you know, in free agency and maybe the other wing spot, you know, and I think, you know, with Randle and Brandon Bass, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good two players to have at the four spot. And Russell's a pretty good point guard. You know, they got Lou Williams, who I like. You know, he'd be a good sixth man. So they got some pretty good pieces. They need a better coach, and you know, they need some more, you know, need some better players on the wings. But I think the Lakers, you know, they have potential.
This is, you know, Kobe retiring has come at the best time, because not only will this help your free agency, but it's going to help your free agency and rebuild your team pretty quick than people think, because the next two seasons, Clay, is, you know, the cap goes up. So not only will you have more cap to spend like everyone else, but being one of the biggest markets and the biggest brands in the NBA, it'll attract even more people now that Kobe, you know, Kobe, he was a kind of a shadow. He was a great legend, of course. Everyone loves Kobe as a fan, and as a player, you idolize him growing up, but you don't really want to play with the guy. So him, the shadow of him leaving opens up the door for free agents to come in and, you know, pretty much fight their way to be the next star for the Lakers and to carry that franchise back to some sort of, you know, at least get back in the playoff hunt.
I'm sorry, we got a message from a gal on Facebook that said, but AI didn't like to practice.
Yeah.
That is pretty good.
I was going to throw that in the pre-show, but then I stuck with the Nova UNC thing.
Oh, that is pretty good. That is a pretty good rant that AI went on. You should have played it.
I should have. Maybe in the whole 8 minutes of just saying practice.
Oh, sorry, I had to throw that in there.
That's all right. That's my boy, but it's okay. You know what? It's all right. The only thing is now when you say Allen Iverson, that's what people go to. Is, oh, yeah, that guy that don't like to practice. That was a rough year for the 76ers. That was Allen Iverson and Larry Brown not getting along whatsoever.
Yeah.
They were terrible, so missed practice too. Oh, man. So, Clay, Villanova is our national champions, and Allen Iverson, who didn't like to practice, is in the Hall of Fame now with Shaq, Yao Ming, Cheryl Swoops, Tom Izzo, and many more. And now next week we can look forward to little bit more of baseball. We had opening day last week, so we'll get into baseball a little bit more next week.
NFL draft heating up. Got to start.
Yeah, getting closer to the NFL draft coming up.
Got to start fine-tuning my mocks. get condensed down to one final mock that will be totally inaccurate, but it's still fun.
I think it'd be fun just to go over and have the possibilities. You know, who can...
mock drafts are basically like NCAA tournament brackets. You know, it's not, you could do it. It's fun to do, but it's not going to be right.
It's not like you're ever going to get every pick right.
You might get a few picks right, but the overwhelming majority is going to be wrong.
That's a wrap. That's going to do it here for today's Sports Report Podcast, TIRN Sports. Make sure you're going over to our Facebook and Twitter page at TIR Sports Report on Twitter, and also Facebook is the Sports Play. Thank you so much for hanging out with me again for another fantastic show.
Oh, anytime. Go Nova.
Go Nova. That's it.
Whatever. I'm not even sure what they say. But
go Wildcats.
Congratulations to the Wildcats.
That's it. All right, everyone have a safe and fun night. We'll see you guys back here next Tuesday for a brand new Sports Report.